to be he's the best salesman for Minnesota, and for what he has achieved here, and what really a half century of progressive governance has achieved here.
Yeah. So talk to me about him and his family, and well, not even though you spoke a little bit about that, but what do you think happens next? Obviously they have the rally today, and then it's going to be a nationwide tour with them. What do you see as a seasoned reporter happening?
Well, he's very good at this, and I think he'll be fine. As you mentioned, his family, there's a couple interesting little nuggets here. His wife, Gwen, is a very strong, powerful figure in her own right. She's a lifelong educator. They struggled to have children, and they had to rely on IVF to do so. And he's got this great line about how he says that it's not by chance that our daughter, our oldest daughter, is named Hope. And so I think that was another sort of kismet moment of this campaign, that IVF has become such a bad issue for Republicans. And here you have a guy whose family is due to IVF. They're just kind of like the all-American Midwestern family. And I think you saw that clip from when they're at the state fair. And he's got a teenage son. It'll be an interesting introduction to the American public. But the bottom line is he's just sort of a likable guy. Mm-hmm. And that's something that Republicans are going to have to try to puncture.
Yeah. What did I want to ask you? Oh, have you had a chance to read? What is the headline? What is a Minnesota Reformer? What are the papers saying there now? If you had a front cover and you could write a headline, what is that going to be when the paper comes out? Maybe perhaps there's a special edition.
Minnesota.
Even though the paper is always living now, it's online. It's not like people wait extra, right?
Minnesota media is sort of famous or infamous for being thirsty for national attention and local angles on national stories. So it's going to be quite overwhelming here with Wall's coverage. But my lead, my headline was you pluck from obscurity, because that's the reality. I mean, I still think the American public doesn't know who Tim Walz is. They don't know much about him. And so the Walz and Harris have some work to do to introduce him. I think if they can get him in front of Americans through that retail campaigning environment, they're probably going to like what they see.
Let's see. What else do we have? So can we put up, this is the tweet from Harris. From the Vice President Harris of the official announcement. By the way, I think she changed her wallpaper, which is, you know, the thing behind her, the big blue thing. And now it says just says Harris Walz. I am proud to announce that we have asked Tim Walz to be the running mate, to be my running mate as a governor, a coach, a teacher, a veteran. He has delivered for working families like his. It's great to have him on the team. Now it's, I'm reading from the actual small little thing. Now let's go to work, join us. And then it's Harris Walz. Pretty simple and really supportive. I think that if you look at what has happened with Vice President Kamala Harris and her campaign, I mean, it's been pretty well run, almost to perfection. You know, if you're looking at it in the vein of a political campaign, especially this late in the game, being able to have the whole Democratic Party coalesce around her, and then now this pick, I don't know, people would say, is it hers to lose? Is it theirs to lose at this point?
I still think it's probably more, it's a toss-up because of the Electoral College advantage that the Trump campaign has. But I think you're right that it does seem that the handoff from Biden to Harris really was flawless, and they've managed to take advantage of this quick timeline. They've avoided major mistakes, And, so I think the Democrats were on their way to losing, and now I think it's much more of a toss-up.
Yeah, it's really shocking. Consider, I mean, what has it been? Has it been 2 weeks? Has it been about 2 weeks, right? Since she's been. Yeah, it was crazy because I said after the debate, I was like, I don't know. I think it's going to be a Trump presidency. And then after the shooting, I was like, oh, well, he won. And then all of a sudden, just like that, you never know. Fortunes change. What do you think?
That's true. Yeah. And going back to Biden stepping aside, I think potentially an important player here is former Speaker Nancy Pelosi, who, you know, at least was reported in the D.C. press, she was backing walls and whipping for him. I think organized labor were also behind this pick. So even though Walz, we feel like he's come out of nowhere, there were some strong institutional forces behind him. Remember, he did serve in Congress for 12 years, and he was not just some random backbencher. I mean, he was a guy who obviously Pelosi, she relied on as a Democrat who held that seat in a pretty conservative district that went for Trump twice.
I'm looking at some political analysis. My friend Bakari Sellers, who is very intimate with all this, says some people on X think it's a great pick. Some people think it's a bad pick. That's my analysis. Is that, do you think that's fair to say? I mean, I actually think it's a really smart pick. Look, I really do like Josh Shapiro. I also like Mark Kelly as well. And as I said, and you know, there was Pete Buttigieg who was possibly there, and a number of other people, Andy Beshear. I think that she had, you know, there was an embarrassment of riches because she had a number of people that were quite frankly really good picks and could have been good vice presidents. But quite honestly, I got to be honest with you, I think that this Tim Walz pick is actually really, really, really smart.
Yeah, I mean, the old saw is that people don't vote based on the vice president.
I think this time makes a difference.
And we'll see whether that plays out or not. And I think not going with the governor of Pennsylvania when you need to win Pennsylvania, it certainly makes it seem like a risky pick. But at the same time, I think she is trying to convey a certain vibe. And that's what she achieves here with Walz, that this is a regular guy from working class background. He's a teacher and a coach and a member and in the National Guard. And he can talk to average people like a normal person, and he's not weird, to use his word. I'm guessing that she also just has good chemistry with him personally.
Let me ask you this, Patrick. Do you think that how much did let's just be honest, how much did Israel play into this? How much did Shapiro's stance, what he's written about Israel, what he has said about Israel, do you think that was a factor? And does that potentially take it off the table now?
Does it help? I don't really know. I mean, nobody has convincingly explained to me how Walz's position or any of the candidates' position on Israel is different than Josh Shapiro. And I do fear that there was sort of an undercurrent of anti-Semitism in some of what, when people were saying that somehow Walz would be a better choice if you're a backer of Palestine. But that was certainly the perception that somehow Shapiro was going to be worse on the Israel-Gaza issue. The other thing to keep in mind here is that if you were to lean away from Israel, you would be disappointing and upsetting a huge an important segment of the Democratic base. I'm not really sure. You know, I certainly have no insight into her decision making, but I don't necessarily think that Walz is considerably different than Shapiro on the issue. I don't think we even know.
You heard the lieutenant governor on a while ago saying that Pennsylvania was on board. Do you think people are going to be disappointed? You think it's going to turn some folks off? It has the potential of turning people in Pennsylvania off because they wanted it to be Josh Shapiro. Maybe they just said, look, we love having him as our governor. Great. He's not going to be vice president. I don't know.
I think people, Democrats, as has been shown the last 2.5 weeks now, are so excited about having a fresh ticket. And one that can prevent a second Trump presidency, that I'm sure there's some disappointment today. There's going to be for a few more days. But I think when all is said and done, folks will be on board. The question is, can Walz, can he really play well in Scranton and in Western Pennsylvania?
Of course. I think he can.
And because that's really, they have to at least hold their margins and then run up the score in Philly and Pittsburgh. You got to win Pennsylvania. So that's why I think that this Walz pick was a considered risk, but a risk.
Do you think that the question is, you don't think it hurts him in Pennsylvania? You don't think it matters in Pennsylvania?
Well, no. I mean, having Shapiro on the ticket, I'm sure it would have given them a significant boost, but they must be confident in their standing there.
Does it help? Do you think it's going to be awkward with Pennsylvania today? And I expect to see, because the lieutenant governor said he's going to be there, I expect to see Josh Shapiro at this rally. And I'm sure you'll see unified and, you know, hands going up with the three of them, right? Holding hands, and we're supportive and we're on board and what have you. Will people buy it? Do you think everyone's going to play nice, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that Governor Shapiro, he's a shrewd guy. He understands that if he were to somehow undermine the ticket, this would not redound well back on him. Mm-hmm. And so I expect that, sure, there's got to be disappointment, but he's going to give a stem winder today, I bet, himself.
Oh, you think this is his moment, even though he's not going to be on the ticket? This is his moment to shine, you think?
Yeah, I mean,
he's great at it. You're right. I didn't think of that. You're so smart, Patrick.
He gets to show what a great team player he is, and there's going to be a big, there's going to be a lot of lights and cameras on him, and so it's a huge opportunity for him, because who knows what's going to happen this fall, and then you've got 2028.
Yeah, listen, I've worked in Philadelphia for a while, and was a local reporter and anchor there, and I think no one pageantry like that, especially when it comes to America, no one does it better than Philadelphia. You got the Liberty Bell, and there's going to be a big flag, and you know what I mean? It's going to be, the original one of the colonies, and one of the capital. It's going to be great, to watch that. I want to ask you something, though, because I've had people in the chat and our subscribers, people who watch, say, you know what? J.D. Vance is not even liked in Ohio. That's what they're saying. I don't know if that's true. Do you think that after this pick that J.D. Vance remains on the ticket with Donald Trump?
Well, I don't even know the mechanics of getting kicked off the ticket. But I think that they're smart enough to know that if they tried to do something like that, it would be a big mess. I mean, it'd be bad news, several bad news cycles.
Especially you're going to drop a Midwest guy because of another Midwest. Ooh, that's not going to play well, would it?
No.
Kyoko is in the chat saying to you, Patrick Kulikin, Kyoko says, I'm sure J.D. Vance is not liked in Ohio. Others are saying J.D. Vance. Yeah, I'm from Ohio and J.D. Vance is not liked here, but you know, go on. I'm sorry.
Well, he ran behind the Republican ticket in 2022. It's not surprising that people would say that, because, it's become a pretty thoroughly Republican state, and he won a fairly narrow victory, all things considered. So, I mean, I think it's fair to say that. And then, he's not He's a provocative guy who and so I can certainly imagine that his numbers are not great in Ohio.
Yeah. I just put in the chat any questions for Patrick Kulikin, our guest, because this is we talk to our viewers here, but most of them say, hey, we're not going back. Let's see. We like Shapiro, but they like Waltz as well. Someone said, will Waltz do good for crypto? Sheila Stewart says that. I don't think that's something that you can answer,
no.
Right?
Yeah, I don't know. Tom Emmer, the majority whip of the U.S. House, the congressman from here, he's the crypto king of Congress. But I don't think that Walls is your man if you're into crypto.
Yeah. How are people feeling there about the economy and about the prospects in general in Minnesota, if you can, before Walls, but about a Democratic ticket, about Kamala Harris?
I think that there has been a surge of excitement here. In the last 2 weeks, like a lot of other places, I think there was concern that we could get a repeat of 2016 when Donald Trump lost here by 44,000 votes. This is the closest they'd come to turning Minnesota red in a long time, and that they would lose the Minnesota State House and lose a lot of the progress they've made in the legislature the last few years, and that's just completely turned around. And obviously with this Walls pick, Minnesota is not a battleground at all. And I think they're probably hoping they're going to get some coattails and have a good election here. This is kind of an important breeding ground for Democratic activists and operatives and elected officials. The chair of the party here is the chair of the National Democratic Committee chairs. Walls is actually the chair of the Democratic Governors Association. We've just produced a lot of Democratic talent, and I think that so people here are extremely enthusiastic about this selection.
Well, I got to say to you, Patrick Kulikin, you are a very good guest, and I hope that you will come back, because I love having guests that inform our viewers and the electorate, because we are really going to need that going into November, and that is the mission of this show. So thank you. Did you get to say everything that you wanted to say? Is there anything that I didn't get to that you think that our subscribers and viewers would like to know or hear?
No, just go to MinnesotaReformer.com and you can check out our coverage.
MinnesotaReformer.com. Check out the coverage while you're there. Make sure to pay particular attention to Patrick Kulikin. Patrick, thank you so much for joining, and we'll have you back real soon, okay? If there are any developments, let us know. And what was your headline? What was the headline for your story?
It's Walls.
Now we have more information from other folks out there about the recent pick for vice president on the Democratic side.
Minnesota, we respect our neighbors and their personal choices that they make. Even if we wouldn't make the same choice for ourselves, there's a golden rule. Mind your own damn business.
A lot of people like that rule. That's Governor Tim Walz talking about reproductive rights and other issues in his first big speech as running mate to Vice President Kamala Harris. Her choice is getting applause from the political center, including independent Senator Joe Manchin, and from the left by Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. She joins us now only on CBS Mornings, and we're glad to have you here.
Of course, thanks for
having
me.
Thank you so much for joining us. Let's talk about the rave reviews that Governor Walz seems to be getting from all spectrums of your party. You've got Nancy Pelosi on one side, Joe Manchin. We have the progressives on the left. What does this mean? What does this say? It's been a long time since we've seen this kind of reaction.
Yeah, well, I think first and foremost, it says that Governor Walz is a uniter, that Vice President Harris is picking a uniter for not just the Democratic Party, but for the entire United States. And that this selection of a ticket between Vice President Harris and Governor Walz is that we are seeing every American. rural America, suburban America, urban America, regardless of identity, that we want to see your interests and we want to make sure that the things that are most important to you, putting food on the table, lowering rent and mortgages, that we see the needs of everyday Americans and we're going to fight and see them in Washington.
But already the Republicans are saying, you've heard this, he's a screaming liberal, progressive. You know, people hear the word Congresswoman progressive and it's like, it's very scary to a lot of people. What does it mean to you, without talking points, in a sentence, what it means to you? And do you think your support helps or hurts the ticket at this particular time? It's certainly in the middle of the country.
Yeah, well, I think progressive means the following. Most Americans believe that money in politics has an outsized role in what happens in government. And to me, being a progressive means putting the needs of working families ahead of the needs of profit and of special interests and corporations. And so that translates into what we see in Governor Walz and the priorities of Vice President Harris, like expanding health care, universal school lunches, things that we care about when we're packing lunch in the morning and picking up our kids at home. And so to me, that is what progressive means, is putting the needs of everyday people ahead of the needs of special interests in Washington.
So let me ask you about the other candidates that were potentially in the running to be her choice for vice president, including Governor Josh Shapiro. There are some who are suggesting that the reason why the vice president didn't pick Governor Shapiro is because of anti-Semitism. Mm. And I did see Chuck Schumer clap back at one Republican or person who's on the right, suggesting that Democrats are anti-Semitic. And Chuck Schumer, obviously, at the very top of power in the Democratic Party as far as the Senate is concerned.
Yeah, I mean, we have Chuck Schumer, who is an incredible leader in the United States Senate. Vice President Harris is married to Doug Emhoff, who has been a profoundly a wonderful figure, who is also Jewish. I think it has nothing to do with that. Vice President Harris had a very challenging, she had a challenge before in that we have so much talent in the Democratic Party, from Governor Shapiro to Governor Walz to many other people that she had to consider. I think that Governor Walz has many different assets that he brings to the table, and I trust her decision in making one that is best for not just the Democratic Party, but again, the entire country.
There is no mention of the war in Israel and Gaza right now. Do you think that was deliberate? Do you think that that should have been mentioned or come up in some way?
Well, you know, I think that this is certainly an issue that's important to many Americans. They're going to want to ensure that we continue our efforts towards a ceasefire in the region. And I'm sure that this discussion will come up certainly between now and November. But we also have a wide scope of issues as well that she has to address. And I think we saw a lot of that addressed last night, including when Governor Walz was addressing issues like IVF and choice, as well as many other issues that are at the top of people's minds right now.
I want to turn to Representative Cori Bush, mm-hmm. who's part of that progressive wing known as the Squad. She lost her race yesterday, and so did Jamal Bowman here in New York. And both of them talked openly about their dissatisfaction with the war in mm-hmm. Israel and Gaza against Hamas. What do you think that says about the Squad and sort of the state of where you all are? Because you had so much support a few years ago, and sort of as Gail pointed out, there's this question about where that party stands, which seemed to have a lot of influence and power early on in the Biden administration.
Well, first, I just want to speak to how courageously Representatives Bowman and Bush have served in Congress. And they spoke courageously on issues that are often very difficult to talk about in mainstream politics.
Right.
And I think that is one of the reasons why they have earned so much support, because they're willing to put their careers on the line to advocate for the issues that they think and viewpoints that they think are right. What I do think it means is that there is an enormous amount of influence of big money in politics. Cori Bush's race was the second most expensive primary in American history. Jamal Bowman's race was the most expensive primary in American history. And all of that money was spent against them by a big money system of super PACs and difficult to trace political contributions. That to me speaks to the corrupting role of our current campaign finance system and the fact that it is very hard to be a working class American that gets elected to office and stay in office. And to me, I think that those defeats speak to the more urgent need for us to continue to advocate on these issues. And I do continue to believe that they represent many of the views of many Americans as well.
Congresswoman, I want to really quickly ask you about this Truth Social post from the former president of the United States, Donald Trump. And in it, he suggests that this is unconstitutional, what's happening with the vice president. He uses derogatory language to name the vice president and the former president, Barack Obama. Do voters in the Democratic Party who are not following the mainstream media or who are not on Truth Social or attending or watching former President Trump's rallies understand this is the kind of language that is circulating on Truth Social, for example?
You know, first of all, there aren't a lot of Americans on Truth Social, to your point. And so I do believe that when the president deploys, or when the former President Trump deploys his most extreme rhetoric, he is doing it in very contained spaces to a very defined audience that is almost primed for some of this most extreme rhetoric. And when he's deploying this kind of extremist rhetoric, he's not doing it in broad channels that most Americans can see. He's doing it on Truth Social. He's doing it in these smaller rallies where I think some of the most rabid and extremist elements that we see really get riled up. And so I don't think a lot of people are aware of the extent to which, whether it's his rhetoric in which he's using derogatory terms about Vice President Harris, to the finer policy details of Project 2025, where he's talking about eliminating, and the Republican Party is talking about eliminating the Department of Education on a federal level, which is what allows us to be able to try to even the playing field for kids in rural communities and urban communities alike.
Because she didn't have a lot of time, her gut, her sort of immediate chemistry with Tim Walz was a key factor in her ultimate decision making. And obviously, they go through all of the key criteria. You want somebody who's going to be a good governing partner, we were told. Somebody who is going to be loyal to you. Somebody who's going to have your back. Somebody who shares many of your values and vision and agenda. But overall, this was something that seemed to come down to the way that they were able to spend a little bit of time together on Sunday and the conversation that they had. And ultimately, Vice President Harris felt that this was someone who she really could build a trusting relationship with, and that this was somebody who wanted to talk about getting access to more rights and freedoms for middle-class families, who she really enjoyed the fact that he is a former high school football coach, a veteran, a gun owner, a hunter, somebody who really has focused on areas that are kind of a complement and contrast to her own experience. And ultimately, I was told, Anna, you have to think about this as, is this somebody that I want to sit down and have lunch with every week for 4 years? Is that the kind of person? And ultimately, for the vice president, Governor Walz was that individual.
And who was her close inner circle? Who was she relying on through this process?
We know that there was a compressed timeline for the vetting, but there were a couple of people who were brought in to do a little bit more of that and to really consult with her as they went through and whittled down the list of candidates. And that includes people who were in the cabinet before, like Marty Walsh. That includes people like Cedric Richmond, who had been a co-chair for the Biden campaign, who is now working with the Harris campaign, and Senator Catherine Cortez Masto of Nevada. So these are people who bring different perspectives from their experience, from their past lives, who were also really key in drilling down on some of the key potential drawbacks or vulnerabilities of some of the candidates, we're told as well. And they had to really do this in the span of a couple of days. They had to do this in these really small meetings that were behind closed doors. But ultimately, the decision was up to Vice President Harris. She said she wanted to kind of sleep on it to solidify what she felt was right, again, in her gut. But she said that really this decision for her was an easy one based on the chemistry and connection she had with Tim Walz. Anna.
Well, Monica, thank you for the reporting. And Dan, you've been covering Harris for a long time. What do you make of her decision-making process in choosing a running mate? Does this sound like her usual MO?
You know, she looks like the person I knew in California. You know, she's out there smiling, she's having a good time. And, you know, when I look at Governor Walz, I don't know him. Most Americans don't. He looks like big grins, big smiles. He's having a good time. Seems to me familiar to the Kamala Harris I know.
And so is it different, though, than the one you've been seeing since her time in California?
Well, I think her, I haven't been covering her as a vice president, but the impression I have from reading and watching her on television is it's been at times rocky as vice president, much less so the last 2 years. But sure, she's under a national spotlight. It's different than a spotlight in California, although we certainly pay attention to politics out here. It's different in Washington.
I want to know more about the Kamala Harris you know, having studied her when she was there in California. She's held a lot of high-profile roles, from San Francisco District Attorney to California Attorney General to Senator, now Vice President. But the polls show a lot of voters still don't feel like they know her well. Why do you think that's the case?
Well, I'm not sure that people especially knew Mike Pence or Al Gore when they were vice presidents. Vice presidents are secondary roles. I do think that Californians have a sense of her. I think they understand that she's a smart person, quick on her feet, has a set of core values. This is not somebody who, just fell out of a coconut tree.
Which she likes to lean into, that meme that you just referenced. You say she's been underestimated throughout her career. You write in the LA Times, "I saw firsthand what kind of candidate she can be. Tough, formidable, disciplined. Without a doubt, Republicans should wish they had stopped her when they had their best chance." What's been key to her successful campaigns in the past?
Well, when she ran for district attorney and when she ran for California Attorney General this first time in 2010, she was running scared. She was an underdog. She was running. Her opponent in 2010, which is the race I really paid most attention to, was the district attorney of Los Angeles, had 40 years of courtroom experience, a really experienced, very good candidate. And on election night, it was so close that he even declared victory. Well, it didn't turn out that way. She ended up winning by 70,000 votes. But national Republicans went after her. It was they knew that if she won that first race statewide, that she was going to be who knows what she was going to run for, governor, senator, president. They wanted to stop her before she rose to that first statewide post as attorney general. And they spent a lot of money trying to do it, over $1 million back when $1 million meant something. And they almost beat her, but they didn't. And this was 2010, so that was really a red wave election.
All very interesting. And you talk about money. She's proven to be a formidable fundraiser, at least so far in this campaign. She just raised another $20 million, we heard, after her announcement yesterday with Tim Walz being chosen as her running mate. Dan Morain, thank you for providing your insights. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Tomorrow is a huge day for the Kamala Harris campaign. The vice president is expected to name her running mate before she begins a barnstorming tour of battleground states on Tuesday. Harris and her new vice presidential pick are scheduled to be in Phoenix on Friday. Yesterday, the vice president met with three of the top contenders. A source close to discussions tells NBC News there are more meetings scheduled today, with the announcement coming tomorrow. Multiple sources close to the campaign tell NBC News that Harris's running mate will make their debut at a rally in Philadelphia tomorrow, and that the announcement most likely will come in a text that's sent to high-ranking Democrats, which is the same way they did it when the President Biden picked Harris.
Now, some local high-profile Republicans are calling on voters to make Kamala Harris the next president of the United States for a simple reason. She's not Donald Trump.
12 News journalist Troy Lynch went to their event to see why they aren't voting for their own nominee.
One of the biggest reasons I'm voting for Kamala Harris and I would have voted for Joe Biden is that they are not Donald Trump.
Not every Arizona Republican is voting red for the next president.
We are here to send a clear message.
Arizonans are rejecting Donald Trump and his failed leadership.
Notable Grand Canyon state Republicans like Mesa Mayor John Giles, former state rep Robin Shaw, and former Scottsdale Mayor Sam Campana all giving their endorsement to Kamala Harris rather than former President Donald Trump. It's a path that can be fraught. Republicans around the country have come out against the former president, dealing with primary opponent, negative ads, and even death threats. Sam Campana believes speaking out is worth the risk.
Another Trump term with J.D. Vance would be far worse and would lead our country down a path that I don't think we could ever recover from.
Mayor Giles believes that Harris will advocate for middle-class Americans, make sure billionaires pay their share of taxes, and secure the southern border.
I know that she will work in good faith with Republicans in Congress to address a congressional legislative fix to our broken border and immigration system.
Shaw says she voted for Trump in the past.
Looking back, I regret that vote.
The three questioning the former president's character and ethics, calling on Republicans to choose country over party and truth over lies.
Those experiences shaped my vision for a better Arizona, one that priorities around environmental stewardship, cultural enrichment, and strong community values.
We reached out to the Arizona GOP, who's expressed their support for Trump, but we did not hear back. For 12 News, I'm Troy Lynch.
You're listening to Audible Sounds on 88.3 WRCT, Pittsburgh. From Audible Sounds on 88.3 WRCT Pittsburgh. That was the Polka Maniacs with Snow Miser versus Heat Miser. And apropos of nothing, Zombo in your brain. It's a Pittsburgh institution that should be locked away in a Pittsburgh institution. Every Friday from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. There you go, Zombo. It's our final show before Christmas and our second final show of 2024. Yeah, it's hard to believe that the year's coming to a close. Well, regardless of what you celebrate, we hope that today's show brightens your winter holiday. Or at least your very damp, wet Western Pennsylvania winter holiday. This is our next track playing beneath me, and it comes from the artist Slow Salvation with their track, The Ghost of Last Christmas. And I hope you enjoy.
Hello, I'm Kevin, President of the Dementia Society of America. Request our free guide. It includes information on brain health checkups and much more. Go to 1-800-DEMENTIA.org or call 1-800-DEMENTIA. Your brain will thank you.
Hark, how the bells, sweet silver bells, all seem to say, throw cares away, Christmas is here, bringing the cheer. Close your mouth except to say you might get something happening. This season has a secret joy that some are missing. We go find it if we just once listen.
WRCT is supported by Tartan Inc. Tartan Inc. is a full-service copy print shop located in University Cohan Center on Carnegie Mellon University campus. Services provided by the Copy Center include black and white and colored copy, single and double-sided copying, and an assortment of colored and textured papers, including covered stock, specialty paper such as gloss paper, resume quality paper, and large format poster paper. They also offer binding and finishing options that include cutting, lamination, folding, padding, stapling, collating, and comb, thermal, and coil binding. Tartan Inc. is also an authorized ship and drop-off site at UPS Shipping. For more information, visit their website at cmu.edu/tartaninc or call 412-268-4828. If you are interested in underwriting for WRCT, you can email pr@wrct.org for more information about promotional exchanges and other partnership opportunities. And all the way from Paris, France, that was An Attendant Anna with the track Close Your Mouth Because Christmas Is the Day. Our next track comes from the artist Thanks Light with his track Dirtbag Christmas.
Well, my cousin caught COVID and gave it to my whole family. So I decided to save myself and make my way back home. Well, the strangest fact through this course of unfortunate mishaps is this ain't the first Christmas that I've spent alone. Well, I guess I'll have another dirtbag Christmas. Scratch-offs and drinking bourbon all alone. Well, the strangest thing to me is that I'm so damn happy drinking by myself on Christmas in my house alone. My neon sign flickers in the corner of my bar in my den, and I turn it on so they might know where I've been. I've been nowhere but somewhere is better than here. Have a drink, you better not think send. Well, I guess I'll have another dirtbag Christmas, playing scratch offs and drinking bourbon all alone. Well, the strangest thing to me is that I'm so damn happy drinking by myself on Christmas at my house alone.
Funky, deep, psychedelic, electronic music and that. Couch Dancing with DJ Firefly. Wednesday afternoons to 3 p.m. to 5 p.m. and re-airing 5 a.m. on Mondays on WRCT Pittsburgh. For our next track, here's Geiger von Moeller with his song, Radar Truck.
Everything I have, I owe to the Adult Literacy Center and getting my high school diploma at age 22.
Find free and supportive adult education centers near you at finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Thank you.
Building and a person and a chair, and you paid for it all, though you may be unaware. You paid for the paper, you paid for the phone, you paid for everything they need to deny it what you're owed. There ain't no you in United Health, there ain't no me in the company, there ain't no us in the private trust. There's hardly humans in humanity. Now the procedure that you're needing ain't the cost-effective route, and only 2% of people end up winning a dispute. So if you get sick, pray to God for health, 'cause your doctor's gotta pray to United Health. Way back in 77, Mr. Richard T. Burke started buying HMOs, putting federal grants to work, made 50 billion buckaroos. Last year, the Warren Buffett of health, the Jeff Bezos of fear. Now CEOs come and go, and one just went. The ingredients you got, bake the cake you get. But if you get sick, cross your fingers for luck, 'cause old Richard T. Burke ain't giving a f. Commoditized health, monopolized fraud. Here's the doctors we own and the research we bought. They own the pharmacies and a lot of the meds. They should start buying graves to sell us when we're all dead. There ain't no you in United Health, there ain't no me in the company, they know us in the private trust. There's hardly humans in humanity. There's hardly humans in humanity.
You're listening to Audible Sounds, and to quickly recap, that was Jesse Wells with the track United Health. And before him, we had the Second Hand Orchestra with the track Listen, the Snow is Falling, slow version. And it comes courtesy of the album Slow, This is Christmas.
We can secure our world when it's time to update an app. Don't you hesitate, do it ASAP.
Just 5 minutes.
Learn how software updates can protect you at cisa.gov/secureourworld.